they're kooky, mysterious and spooky. They're all together ooky, the Addams Family. The house is a museum, when people come to see them, they really are a scream, the Addams Family.
Neat. Sweet. Petite.
So get a witch's shawl on, a broomstick you can crawl on. We're gonna pay a call on the Addams Family.
Pixie, kobold, elf, and sprite, all are on their rounds tonight. In the wan moon's silver ray, thrives their helter-skelter play. Joel Benton. Happy Halloween, and welcome to Youth Beat Radio's spooktacular preview. Settle in with some cider and get ready to explore all the legend, folklore, and tradition that encompass Halloween night. But beware, strange things lurk in the shadows, and you never know what might entice them to show themselves. So, if you dare, come beyond our crypt doors, pardon the dust, and come with me into the world of Halloween.
Boys and girls of every age, wouldn't you like to see something strange?
Come with us and you will see, this is our town of Halloween.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween.
Scream in the dead of night.
This is Halloween, everybody make a scene.
Trick or treat,
tell the neighbors on the diaphragm.
It's our town,
everybody's free.
In this town of Halloween,
I am the one hiding under your bed, teeth ground sharp and eyes glowing red.
I am the one hiding under your stairs, fingers like snakes and spiders in my hair.
This is Halloween, this is Halloween.
In this town, we call home. Everyone hail to the pumpkin song.
In this town, don't we love it now? Everybody's waiting for the next surprise.
Round that corner and hiding in the trash can. Something's waiting out to pounce.
And how are you three?
This is Halloween.
Red and black.
It's slightly green.
Aren't you scared?
Well, that's just fine.
Say it once, say it twice. Take a chance and roll the dice.
Ride with the moon in the dead of night.
Everybody scream. Everybody scream!
In our town of Halloween,
I am the clown with the tearaway face!
Here in a flash and gone with a trace!
I am the who in the cold who's there!
I am the wind blowing through your hair!
I am the shadow on the moon at night, filling your dreams to the brim with fright!
This is Halloween, this is Halloween! Halloween, 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 Halloween!
Halloween.
That's our job,
but we're not mean.
In our town of Halloween,
in this town,
don't we love it now?
Everyone's waiting for the next surprise.
Skeleton Jack might catch you in the back and
scream like a bat. You make you jump out of your skin.
This is Halloween, everybody scream.
Won't you please make way for a very special guy?
Woman Jack is king of the pumpkin patch. Everyone hail to the pumpkin king.
Now this is Halloween.
Halloween, a night of mystery, magic, and for dentists, the forebearer of big business. We all know the modern traditions, trick-or-treating, jack-o'-lanterns, and costumes and crazy parties. But all these must have their roots somewhere. So where do our most beloved customs come from? Well, to answer that, we need to take a trip back far in time. Back to the British Isles and the Celtic people who inhabited them, thousands of years ago. For many years, the Celts held fast to the Druid religion, and it is here that we find the first inkling of what we today call Halloween. For the Druids, the New Year came not with the snow and cold of January, but with the harvest in October. October 31st was called Samhain and was one of the most prominent festivals of the year. It gave thanks for the bountiful food and, more importantly, gave the dead a time to revisit the earth. On Samhain, it was believed that the veil between our world and the spirit world was at its thinnest, and that spirits could cross over for the night. Huge bonfires were lit to serve both as beacons for good spirits and deterrents for the bad. It was widely believed that evil could not stand fire. The festivities could then begin. Fortune-telling abounded. Predictions were made for the new year. Would it be a good harvest? Would you find love? Would there be war? Around 1800 AD, as Christianity found its way to the Isles, Pope Gregory III declared November 1st All Hallows Day, a day to remember all saints to the Church. This wise political tactic meant that the Church could easily influence Druids to celebrate this holiday in conjunction with their own Samhain. The holidays were a day apart, and both honored the dead. This was largely a play on the part of the Church to eliminate what they deemed a devilish and barbaric religion and to convert pagans to Christianity. During the Middle Ages, All Hallows Eve, now called All Saints' Day, was celebrated with zeal, particularly by the Irish and Scottish descendants of Druids, who still believed firmly in ghosts and fortune-telling. In fact, it is thanks to these nations that Halloween made its way to the U.S. During the Irish Potato Famine of 1840, millions of Irish found a new home in the United States, bringing with them their age-old customs. They introduced many of their fortune-telling games and folk stories to American culture, and they caught like wildfire. All Hallows' Eve, or Snapapple Night as it was sometimes known, was practiced nationwide almost instantly, and by the 1860s, newspapers published detailed accounts of the evening. Fortune-telling was the most widely found form of celebration, and there was never a lack of magical items. Apples especially seemed to hold mystic properties and were used in a multitude of games to predict, most of the time, the future spouse or wealth of the player. By the 1930s, fortune-telling had developed into playing tricks on neighbors. Many newspapers report cabbages being thrown at doors and chalk dust being used as a form of hard-to-remove graffiti. To combat their mischievous children, neighborhoods began putting together the first Halloween parties, inviting children to dress up and come eat candy treats in a controlled setting. The costumes were the resurrection of the belief that spirits could not find you when disguised. And, by the way, Despicable Me's minions took top costumes in polls last year. But the treats, well, those deserve a segment all their own. Trick-or-treating has its roots in souling. During medieval times, poor children would use the night of the 31st to go souling for small cakes. Going from door to door, they begged neighbors for one of these small treats, usually made with raisins, and a small amount of money. In return, they would pray for a soul trapped in purgatory to find its way to heaven. The tradition of eating soul cakes continued into the 1800s, but really got a jumpstart in the 1930s. In addition to parties, cities also decided to hand out candy to anyone willing to go door to door. And so trick-or-treating was born. Speaking of soul cakes.
A soul cake, a soul cake. These good misses a soul cake. An apple, a pear, a plum, or a cherry. Any good thing to make us all merry. Soul cake, a soul cake. These good misses a soul cake. One for Peter, two for Paul, and three for him that made us all.
Soul cake.
God bless the master of this house and the mistress also, and all the little children that round your table grow, the cattle in your stable, the dogs at your front door, and all that dwell within your gates will wish you 10 times more. Soul cake, a soul cake, please good missus, a soul cake. An apple, a pear, a plum, or a cherry, any good thing to make us all merry. Soul cake, a soul cake, please good missus, a soul cake. One for Peter, two for Paul, and three for him that made us all. Go down into the cellar and see what you can find. If the barrels are not empty, we'll hope that you'll be kind.
We hope that you'll be kind with your apple and your pear. A soaky, a soaky, please good missus, a soaky. An apple, a pear, a plum or a cherry, any good thing to make us all merry. Soaky, a soaky, please good missus, a soaky. One for Peter, two for Paul, three for him that made us all.
And we're back. For those of you fortunate enough to have found us, welcome to Youth Beat Radio's tantalizing season premiere. As we near Halloween, we discuss some of the legends, the folklore, and the myths surrounding one of America's favorite holidays. But let us take a momentary reprieve from storytelling to talk about, what else? Pumpkins! Along with apples, pumpkins are some of the most popular produce around Halloween. How popular, you ask? Well, the best estimate is that around 18,952 tons of the gourd are sold throughout the U.S. and the U.K. every Halloween season. To put that into different terms, that's 430 million vampire bats, 4 million cats, and enough jack-o'-lanterns to stretch from Columbus to Salem, Massachusetts, and back. Speaking of jack-o'-lanterns, do any of our listeners happen to know the famous story of Jack and his lantern? For those of you left in the dark, let me illuminate. Jack was an Irishman of the worst repute. Lazy, drunk, and scheming, he wasted most of his life at the gambling tables or in taverns. But Jack was also wildly clever, and because of this, never went without some money in his pocket from cards or dice, which he mostly cheated at. Now, when the time came for Jack to die, the devil came up to claim his soul. What did you expect? But Jack wasn't so keen on going just yet, and he said to the devil himself, "If you are the devil, prove it. Change yourself into a coin." Now, the devil dislikes backing down from a challenge, so he easily turned himself into a sparkling gold coin, just as Jack had asked. Quick as a whip, Jack grabbed the devil and shoved him into his pocket, which contained a silver cross. Jack promised to let the devil go on one condition. He could never be taken to hell. Now, seeing as he was stuck, the devil had very little choice in the matter and begrudgingly granted Jack his wish. Jack released him, and in a manner all too fitting, the devil disappeared in a cloud of sulfur. Jack died not long after making this deal, and, of course, was not admitted into heaven. But the devil refused to take him to hell. And so, Jack stood rather frightened in the darkness of the netherworld, wondering what he would do. The devil, unable to resist a last jab at Jack, threw a hot coal at his back as he walked into the abyss. But Clever Jack scooped up the coal immediately and stuck it into the bite mark of a turnip he happened to be munching on. You see, it was his favorite food, and he was buried with it. As he walked, he slowly hollowed out the turnip, and soon the coal had a snug compartment to lie in. And so, even to this day, denied entrance to heaven and hell, Jack roams the darkness, his single coal glowing in its turnip. Now, in honor of Jack, we carve our own lanterns. But we use pumpkins because they're far easier to grow in the U.S. and, let's face it, far more fun to carve.
I was working in the lab late one night when my eyes beheld an eerie sight. For my monster from his slab began to rise, and suddenly, to my surprise,
he did the mash.
He did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
He did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
He did the mash.
He did the monster mash. From my laboratory in the castle east to the master bedroom at the vampire's feast, the ghouls all came from their humble abode to get a jolt from my electrode.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They did the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They did the mash.
They did the monster mash. The zombies were having fun.
In a shoebox.
The party had just begun.
In a shoebox.
The guests included Wolfman,
in a shoebox,
Dracula, and his son.
The scene was rocking, all were digging the sounds. Igor on chains, backed by his baying hounds. The coffin bangers were about to arrive with their vocal group, the Crypt Kicker Five.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash.
The monster mash.
It was a graveyard smash.
They played the mash.
It caught on in a flash.
They played the mash.
They played the monster mash. Out from his coffin, Rex's voice did ring. Seemed he was troubled by just one thing. Opened the lid and shook his fist and said, whatever happened to my Transylvania twist?
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash.
The monster mash.
And it's a graveyard smash.
It's now the mash.
It's caught on in a flash.
It's now the mash.
It's now the monster mash. Now everything's cool, Rex a part of the band. And my monster mash is the hit of the land. For you the living, this mash was meant to. When you get to my door, tell them Gordy said.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
The monster mash.
And do my graveyard smash.
Then you can mash.
You'll catch on in a flash.
Then you can mash.
Then you can monster mash.
Welcome back to Youth Beat Radio's Halloween special. We hope you're enjoying this October evening and we're glad you chose to join us. So far this show, we've covered a history of Halloween, jack-o'-lanterns, and the massive amount of pumpkins consumed each year. But we've neglected one very important player in the spectacle of All Hallows' Eve. Ghosts. Yes, it's ghosts. Those terrifying, misty white figures that haunt the corners of our mind. From a young age, we hear tales of weeping ladies in white, headless horsemen, and ghostly footsteps from nowhere. And Ohio has a special reputation for being haunted. In fact, we've been dubbed the most haunted state in the Union. Franklin County alone supposedly boasts a small army of phantoms. So what are some of the legends that have taken root and blossomed here? Well, the Camp Chase Cemetery in Columbus, Ohio, was once a military training ground and prison camp during the Civil War. Though it has long since been built over, a sad testament to the war between the states remains. The graves of 2,260 Confederate soldiers who met their end in the camp. As such, perhaps it is no surprise that a ghost has seemingly made its home here. However, it is surprising that the ghost is not that of a soldier. Instead, a lady dressed all in gray is often seen weeping amongst the gravestones. Though she sometimes seems to be walking, she is more frequently seen sobbing over the grave of a Mr. Benjamin F. Allen, 50th Tennessee Regiment, Company D. Thought to be a woman named Louisiana Rainsburg Griggs, though there is speculation, fresh flowers often appear on Private Allen's grave after her sightings. Another lady seems to haunt the park next door to Columbus Children's Hospital. This beautiful woman appears clad in a soft pink dress as she floats amongst the park's trees. Multiple children claim to have seen this gentle, kindly-looking woman from their windows. Aptly dubbed the Lady in Pink, she may linger because the land the park occupies was once a cemetery. Used for Confederate burials in wartime, it eventually became an impediment to construction and the graves were excavated, with the bodies being removed to Greenlawn Cemetery. Though the identity of the Lady in Pink remains unknown, it is possible that she is there weeping for a loved one, mourning the loss that the Civil War took on her heart. Deep in the heart of downtown Columbus, the Ohio State House stands as proud and beautiful as it did upon its completion in 1861. With a grand staircase inspired by the famed Paris Opera House and elegant white pillars, it is no wonder that a few spirits have chosen to linger here. From light taps on the shoulder to footsteps from nowhere, the State House has its fair share of hauntings. The most famous, however, is of a great deal of interest. In February of 1861, President-elect Abraham Lincoln was making his way to Washington to be inaugurated. On his way, he stopped at the State House for a small reprieve and celebration. He quickly befriended a young woman named Kate Chase, and the two waltzed together that evening. After his assassination, Lincoln's spirit must have thought fondly back to that dance and the sweet young woman, for he seems to have returned to find her. And amazingly, she has waited for him as well. They are occasionally seen reliving their dance together in the State House's rotunda, a beautiful warbling tune wrapping around them. Of death in the States, though. Ohio is also boasting a surprising number of poisonous plants. Aside from the skin irritants of poison ivy, oak, and sumac, along with a few choice others, you can easily find several very toxic plants growing hither and fro. Perhaps the most well-known is poison hemlock. Not to be confused with the coniferous tree, poison hemlock is a lower-growing plant whose white flowers resemble those of Queen Anne's lace. Famously ingested by the philosopher Socrates as a form of suicide, it causes confusion, nausea, vomiting, muscle paralysis, and death. Ugh. In contrast to its rather dark nature, it enjoys growing in open and sunny fields. Foxglove also finds a comfortable home in Ohio. This popular garden plant grows tall and strong, sporting thick stalks of pastel-colored bell-shaped flowers. Though it is beautiful, digitalis, as it is scientifically known, is also deadly. When ingested at the right level, it causes symptoms that mimic those of a heart attack, thanks to its high levels of potassium. In fact, it has been used historically in many murders, and cases of death by foxglove can even be found today. So, be careful the next time you're admiring a flower arrangement. Who knows what might be hiding? As we draw to a close, we have only a few minutes left to address our last remaining topic. And in a show such as ours, we can think of no better way to finish off than with some very interesting creature features. First up, the common vampire bat. One of several bats who makes a livelihood off of drinking the blood of other animals, called hematophagy, the vampire bat is truly one of nature's most unique creatures. Unlike their insectivore cousins, the vampire bat emits only a low-frequency sound. It also doesn't seem to be nearly as picky as the white-winged or the hairy-legged vampire bat. While the latter two selectively feed on fish and goats, the common vampire bat will enjoy a smorgasbord of mammalian blood. But please don't worry. This little creature is most certainly not a mythical vampire, nor could he ever drink enough blood to kill you or your pet. In fact, chances are that if one of these guys bit you, nothing at all would happen. And what is a Halloween special without mentioning cats? Yes, sly and silent, these little felines have come to embody Halloween and its spiritual components. Once thought to be the familiars of witches, they evolved to be the sweet, domestic animals we know them to be. But are they as innocent as they seem? Recent studies show that cats kill more than you may think. In fact, nearly 3.7 billion birds find their end at the swipe of a cat's claw every year. Add to this the staggering figures of 6 to 20 billion small mammals, and you have quite a body count. But despite the fact that they have some violent tendencies, cats can be found with a permanent place in our hearts. In fact, 30.4% of Americans own cats. That's 36,117,000 households. Well, that's all we have time for on this edition of Youth Beat Radio. Please tune in next week, and the week after that, and the week after that, and so on and so forth. We hope you enjoyed our spooktacular special. I'm Lindsay Hirsch, reporting for Youth Beat Radio. Eat, drink, and be scary. And have a haunted Halloween. ¶¶